Yeah. Welcome back to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 29. And today we're going to take a deep dive, kind of maybe a shallow dive, into Google Pixel 3 and Pixel 3 XL. We did our review this week. This week was the big embargo week for Pixel 3 reviews. So we had our written review up on Monday morning and then our video review later that day. A lot of people told me that I sounded very unenthusiastic in that video.
I thought it sounded smooth. You sounded smooth.
Yeah, but I think people were critical of like how I sounded bored, I guess. Like I wasn't super excited about the phone. I think people are used to YouTubers that are like, and welcome back. This is another video from, you know, and like, and so I was monotone in comparison, I guess, is what I'm saying.
That was your podcasting voice. That's how I heard it as. I found it as an improvement over like your older videos because you've been podcasting for like 100+ episodes every day with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I have gotten a little bit better at the voiceover thing. And writing scripts is so much easier now, too. For the first like 50, sorry, I'm at 160. Today's 160 for 9to5 Google Daily. For the first like 50 of them, I was scripting them. So like I was actually in a Word document, like, you know, scripting out that whole 2 minutes of talking. And after that, slowly just turned into like every day I can just, you know, just look at 9to5 Google homepage and just see like what we covered for the day and just spit it out. Usually in one take, which it took me a long time. I don't think that I got to the point where I'm just able to do like one take in like literally 2 minutes. And then the post takes me like 10 minutes until like episode 100 or something. So yeah, I've definitely gotten a little bit better at thinking on my toes and, you know, doing voiceovers and stuff like that. So appreciate that you think it was smooth, but not everyone felt that way apparently. But anyways, Pixel 3 and Pixel 3 XL, I have them right here actually. I would love for anyone who's listening or watching to drop some questions in the chat on YouTube Live or YouTube live stream, Hangouts on Air, whatever they're calling it these days. And let us know what you want to know about them that we haven't covered or that you haven't seen people talk about in reviews. We'd love to try and fill in those holes for you. I'm not sure how many of those questions we'll be able to get to, but absolutely do that. Basically, my take on them, and I wrote this in my first impressions, is that they're back to the consistency of the first two Pixels. So if you remember, the first two Pixels were identical, so like almost identical, except for battery sizes battery sizes and screen sizes. And I really appreciated that, but both as a reviewer and as a buyer, as a customer, because it made making the decision between them very easy. It basically came down to a decision of whether or not I wanted a big screen. And this year we're back to that with the minor caveat of the notch.
Yes. Yes. I think that is a sizable, it's a very sizable caveat that I don't know if we're going back to how the Pixel and Pixel XL are identical phones. It's 2 years running is how we've been in this noticeable split. It got much better this year, but they are different phones.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm talking about when I say that is the build quality and like things like last year, like the Pixel 2 XL's display was kind of curved on the edge the same way as Samsung. Maybe not that extreme, obviously, but you know, had a curved like curved glass on the side to an extent. Well, the smaller Pixel 2 didn't have that at all. And you know, there was obvious build differences. I felt like the coating on the back felt different. The cameras were obviously flipped around on the back for whatever reason.
That was the most annoying, like, why?
Yeah.
Why?
But yeah, so this year they're identical and I like that. And it's much easier to recommend them now. Well, not only are they identical, that's like one aspect, but another aspect is that they feel more finished. They feel, there's a lot less problems. The Pixel 2 XL's display was trash, unequivocally, in my opinion. I guess I kind of got used to it after a while. I still used it all the way up until last week. Because you know, it didn't outweigh the benefits of the software. Mm-hmm. But yeah, none of those issues are there this year. So the screen was the big one. That made it really hard to recommend the Pixel 2 XL, just like, this is the best Android phone. You know, I couldn't really say that because it was like this is a fundamental aspect of the phone and Google botched it, you know? And so it's like, it is a really, really good Android phone, like asterisk, like, except the display is kind of bad and you have, your mileage may vary. And that's not the case this year. So I'm back to, the first year I said, these are the best Android phones and probably the best phones for a lot of people. Last year it was like, Pixel 2 might be good for some people. Pixel 2 XL might be good for some people. And this year I'm back to, these are the best Android phones. And in some cases, I think the best phones. I think there's a lot of people who would prefer these over the iPhone XS and XS Max, especially considering they are $200 and $400 different or cheaper? $300 cheaper? I don't know.
200, yeah. $799 and $899 versus $999. Actually, if you want to make a slight dive, what is... How would you compare the Pixel 3 to the iPhone XS, the XR?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're both in the category of, well, it's kind of neither, I would say.
Okay.
Like, I wouldn't directly put them side by side with the XR or the XS. I guess closer to the XR. For the smaller Pixel 3, closer to the XR.
Mm-hmm.
And the price lines up with that. Let's see if anyone has any questions. I don't see any really. Why did you choose white? I didn't. Google did. the two units I have right now are Google's.
Go ahead. I have a question for you. So you said the XL won you over at the end of the day. Why did you arrive at that decision?
So I think for me, it came down to the display and how much I appreciate the extra display real estate. It's not really that it has that display up here. Like, I don't like, this is not a deal. Like, it's not a huge win to me. Like, Google's really been pushing that. Like, they're really like, yeah, it has a notch, but it has way more to screen. So that makes up for it. And I just don't buy that. But I do, I mean, I like the Pixel 2 XL over the smaller Pixel 2 for the same reason. The extra screen real estate, and especially last year, the screen was just nicer because it had the rounded edges. Well, the screen was nicer in form factor. It was not nicer in quality. So, yeah, for the same reason I would have picked the bigger Pixel 2 last year, I just like more display. And I think... the way I would describe the quality this year is the Pixel 3 is a 9.9 out of 10 and the Pixel 3 XL is a 10 out of 10. Like, that's
here's
like,
what I found.
Okay, every time. it's so close. It's very, very close. Although you can see just ever so slightly, I think, like, the colors and the vibrancy of the smaller one is just ever so slightly less. But it's close enough, and that's why. I mean, I mean, the benefits of the bigger screen, having the bigger screen, I just like bigger screens. But also, I have to say, I've gotten used to the notch. Like, I have been the most vocal anti-notch and chin design person there is on the internet, probably. I hate it. I hate it so much, and this feels like such a I don't want to say that on the podcast. It's like a halfway like attempt at doing what Apple did. And so it's like, I don't know, like, I would have preferred that a lot of these makers would have just held off for a year before they could, so they could figure out this wrap around display thing that Apple does on the bottom of the iPhone X, and just wait for that and just do it right the first time. And this notch and chin thing, the chin itself doesn't really bother me. It's gotten to the point where the notch itself doesn't really bother me, but I like the word that The Verge used in the review, which was, it's doofy. It's got a doofy notch. The design of the display is kind of doofy, and you get used to it, and it's fine in quality and in function, but it just looks dumb. And that's the bigger, I mean, these things have leaked crazily over the last few months, as we know. And so it looks on the internet, looking at pictures, it looks really doofy, and in hand, it looks really doofy, but when you use it, it's fine.
How long did it take you to adjust?
To the notch thing.
Yes.
I mean, I still, you know, it's not invisible. You know, if I consciously am aware that it's there, but I mean, it took me 5 minutes to adjust. I mean, even at the event, holding the phones, using the phones, you know, for hands-on stuff, I noticed it within 5 minutes that I was no longer, thinking actively about the notch being there, and it didn't really bother me. It's the same thing with the iPhone 10. I've been using the iPhone 10 for about 6 months now, and on and off. And I originally, you know, for the first like hour or whatever of using the phone, I was like kind of weird. It was just weird. And that's not normal. It's not the traditional top and bottom bezel situation we've had for the last 10 years. And so it just catches you off guard a little bit, but you know, you focus, I think what happens is you focus on what's on the screen. If you're on Twitter and looking at a tweet, you're not thinking about the notch. I think you underestimate how much you're focusing on the actual content. One place that obviously is unavoidably in the way is when you're watching YouTube in landscape and full screen. That's probably one of the big things. Another thing, though, is that sorry if you haven't noticed this because you're not going to be able to unsee it, but the radius of the top corner corners are different than the bottom corners. So that's another thing that, like, especially when you're watching YouTube and landscape. You notice that when you're watching YouTube and landscape. How good are the haptics on the phone? Someone asked. I've said this 1,000 times. It's better than every Android phone and worse than every iPhone since 2015. yeah. Any other questions you have, Abner, that I can...
Do you think... I think what this year, more than usual, I'm seeing people questioning whether the small phone is big enough for them. Do you have any thoughts on that? Whether people obviously like bigger is better to most people, and that's proven out the history of Android versus iPhone. Can these edge-to-edge design push people to the smaller phone this year?
So you're saying, do you think people that use the larger phone or would use a larger phone normally and are going to the smaller because of the notch situation,
it's more just the screen size. Is that 5.5 inches enough for most people? I think it's 5.5.
It feels small. I know it's not because, you know, it's bigger than the iPhone. I mean, it's the same 5.5. That's bigger than the iPhone 6, right? I don't know. It feels small, but I've been using big phones for 3 years. So to me, it's like, I don't know. I've just gotten used to using the phablet form factor. And so it feels small to me, but I feel like it's just as functional. It's just as, I don't know. Like if I had to pick between the small Pixel 3 and the Pixel 2 XL every day of the week, I'd pick the smaller Pixel 3. If I had those only those two options.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the original Pixel, obviously, because we've moved on from, you know, in a specs standpoint from the original Pixel. But I mean, even something like the Note 9, I would say I'd probably use the smaller Pixel 3 over the Note 9, despite the size difference. Just because, I mean, this is something that's so underrated, is just the user experience is just so good. Everything from the setup process to there being absolutely zero unnecessary apps installed, unnecessary bloat. Someone asked a question about the RAM situation, and that's something I think needs to be talked about a little bit more than it has been. I think a lot of people's take is this thing costs $800 and up, and or $900 and up for the 3XL, and it should have 6 gigs of RAM just because. Mm-hmm. Because every other phone that's that price does, except the iPhone, which has less than 4 gigs of RAM still in 2018. So I think that, you know, we have to keep that in perspective. The latest iPhones still, XS Max has 3 gigs, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, I don't buy the, it should just have more than 4 gigs because it costs that much, because sure. The price is not directly, I don't think price is directly correlated with the specs that you're getting. Price is directly correlated with how good the product is as a whole. And my take on how good it is and how well it's handling 4 gigs of RAM as of today, this could change in a year. I don't know. The 2XL has obviously not stood the test of time. So I don't know how it's going to happen in a year. As of today, it's doing, and from a performance standpoint, absolutely fine. I mean, I opened 20 apps and, you know, one thing that has to be mentioned. So I said something very controversial on Twitter the other day. I said that the 4 gigs of RAM on the Pixel 3, well, the Pixel 3 with 4 gigs of RAM performs better than the OnePlus 5 with 8 gigs of RAM. And I got questioned and asked, like, what do you mean by that? Because obviously the OnePlus 5 is going to be able to store way more apps in RAM, and you're going to be able to multi, like, so I saw a video today that was comparing side by side the Pixel 3 with, I think, the Note 9, and showing just how many apps you can keep in RAM. And the Note 9 was like keeping like 20 apps. So like there was a game that was, you know, like there were 20 apps. One of them was a game, and it was like all the way at the top of multitask or the app switcher or whatever. And, you know, it was able to just pull it up and just go because it wasn't having to, you know, refresh it. And the Pixel 3 was obviously having to refresh it. And so from a technical standpoint, like, can you keep 20 apps running in RAM at all times? No, because it only has 4 gigs of RAM. But I think what people equate RAM with is good performance. People think more RAM equals more better performance. And for the average person, I don't think the average person needs 20 apps to stay open in RAM. And I think that despite having only 4 gigs of RAM, one, Google does a really good job of RAM management, better than pretty much anyone. Two, you don't need to have 20 apps open in RAM all the time. And I think for most people, they probably only need like 3 or 4. And the Pixel 3 could do 3 or 4 just fine, and if not excellently. So that's my take on the RAM situation. Do you have any thoughts on it at all?
Oh, more RAM always helps. Well, I'll qualify that on like desktops and laptops, more RAM equals more power consumption. But I think more always helps on phones, just to future-proof it. I don't think it ever hurts to have more. And I definitely feel at $799, we're getting to a premium category, which Google has otherwise been competing on. And I think more than 4 gigs of RAM is a premium spec that it's not too crazy an expectation for users to have these days.
Yeah, but how do you? I mean, what are your thoughts on the you know, the $1,200 XS Max having 3 gigs of RAM? Does that? I mean, do you think the iPhone XS Max should have 6 gigs of RAM, or I mean, is that? Are you saying because it's $1,200 that it should also have 6 gigs or 8 gigs of RAM too? Just because? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, actually, in terms of my primary view is coming from future-proofing these devices, future-proofing these expensive purchases for most people. And yes, the iPhone can get away with it because of their excellent platform, of their excellent OS management.
Yeah.
And Google is clearly doing it with the Pixel, with the various optimizations. And yes, they should be applauded for that. But at the same time, those optimizations can be seen as a benefit and as a negative. It's awesome that they're able to optimize a smooth experience at 4 gigs, something which your review highlighted. But at the same time, that can also be seen as a con. They had to optimize because there's only 4 gigs.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I don't really have a deep technical understanding of how the intricacies of how RAM management works. So I can't really provide a super intelligent analysis of the situation. But I mean, I will say, like, for instance, obviously RAM has, you know, the software needs for the hardware has, you know, it's marched forward over time. You know, there wasn't that long ago the phones had 0.5 gig of RAM and they ran perfectly because the software didn't need that much. There's a march forward that just has to happen naturally because software is getting more complex. Apps have more needs. People are doing more with their phones, multitasking more, you know, how we use our phones and how important they are to our daily lives is increasing. And therefore, the technical needs of those apps and applications, use cases are increasing. So that's a given to me. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that I think the march forward, Google will participate. You know, Google's not exempt from the march forward. Mm-hmm. Just like Apple isn't. Apple has marched forward as well. You know, it wasn't that long ago that the flagship iPhone had 1 gig of RAM, and now they have 3. And so I'm not against more RAM. I just don't. I can see an argument where Google's saying, like, yeah, we have 4 gigs this year, and for all intents and purposes, the user experience is excellent and probably better than most other Android phones, regardless of how much RAM they have.
Absolutely.
So. So maybe we'll have 6 gigs of RAM next year or the year after that. But for now, they are not, it's not a priority and it's not a selling point. They're not, I mean, some phone companies put 8 gigs of RAM on a banner ad to advertise the phone. And Google's not interested in that. I mean, one minor aspect of this, and this is obviously minor, but it could be a bigger deal when you consider the number of phones that they're selling, is RAM costs money, and the 6 gig RAM module costs ever so slightly more than a 4 gigs RAM module. And if the user experience is identical at the end of the day, then, you know, that's one place where they can save money.
I should also qualify my thoughts by saying that I don't want this to become a trend for Google. I'm referring to how the base pixel slate is 4 gigs and so on. We've discussed this on the previous episode on how Google thinks that's enough for the entry pixel slate and doing a good experience. But I'm not saying that Google is skimping. They're the company that included both USB-C headphones and a dongle in the box this year, Apple. And I just don't want this to be a trend for them to follow going forward. If they can, they should. If it's priced expensive, as it is again, which I think is more of a sticking point this year than in previous years, I think they should have increased the RAM.
Yeah, but someone corrected me. The XS Max has 4 gigs, not 3.
Oh, really?
But still. Someone asked, how is battery life? Battery life is just fine, if not better than phones in this category. I think I'm not super, I don't know. When I test phones, when I review phones, I just try to use them like a normal person and write my thoughts out based on how I feel about them rather than, you know, I tend to lean qualitatively in my reviews versus quantitative, which I know is uncommon in the Android space or in the Android blog world. Almost everyone leans quantitative. Like people are like, you know, screenshotting their on-screen on time, you know, stats every day for a week and posting screenshots and showing the data. But for me, it's like, how does this phone fit in my life? And the answer in terms of battery life is it's fine. One thing I will say is I haven't noticed the Pixel 3 to be any worse than the Pixel 3 XL. That's a lot of people's concern. I think the 3 can make it through a day fine for 99% of people. Another thing I will say is the Pixel stand makes a big difference in this area. So, you know, I really think that wireless charging is going to be the next. I mean, I think it's already here. It's been, Google did it long before the iPhone popularized it. Finally, it took Apple forever to finally like pull the trigger on that and finally get, you know, people will be taking it seriously, but it's here and it's happening and it's for real. And the Pixel stand really makes the charging situation with the Pixel much nicer. I think for me, especially as a phone reviewer, I've got like 10 phones on my desk right now. It's really nice to just be able to plop any of them on a stand and charge them rather than, I mean, I know they're all USB-C at this point, or most of them are. Actually, I've got enough variety of devices that not everything is USB-C. I've got iPhones and modern Android phones and some older Android phones that have different plugs. So I really appreciate the potential future of everything being Qi.
Okay, let's talk about the Pixel stand for a second. Have you been
fine? You're really breaking up. And so you might do better if you turn off your video or something.
Ooh, not bad. Okay. Yeah. That's just...
And you're gone. I'll have to cut this out of the post-podcast audio, but Abner disappeared for a minute. He's having connection issues. He is stuck with Comcast or some kind of bad internet that has a monopoly, so can't really blame him for the situation. I'll answer some more questions in the meantime. Someone said Xiaomi Mi Mix is coming next week with 10 gigs of RAM. Not surprised. So battery is nothing amazing. It just works. Yeah, I'd say that's probably the situation. I don't know. It may be amazing, but I haven't quantitatively tested it. So my take is that it's good enough for your life. And you definitely don't need to charge during the day. Are you back, Abner?
Yes, I am.
Okay, cool. Sweet. We didn't actually lose anyone during that downtime. So that's impressive.
So my question was about the Pixel stand. You said you had multiple chargers, you had multiple wireless chargers. Do you notice when you don't have the Pixel Stance assistant UI available to you?
No, not yet. It's not really, I think it's a little bit buggy still, Pixel Stand is. I know a lot of people phones are shipping now, so you'll probably find this out for yourself, but the Pixel Stand situation, I mean, so sometimes I'll put it down in the Pixel Stand and it will charge, but it won't pop up with the Pixel Stand UI, which is weird. Other times it will, other times it just won't charge. It's kind of like, it works 90% of the time, and I think it's a software related issue. So I don't know, but your answer, one of the issues that I've been having is that if you're using the Pixel Stand in the same room as a Google Home, it's not smart enough to realize that you're talking to one over the other. And so both will respond to you even when you're logged into the right Google account. I initially tested this and thought that it was because I was logged into two different Google accounts. But no, regardless of what Google account you're logged into, in my case, my Google Home and my Pixel Stand were both logged into my personal Gmail. I think as far as I've tested so far, it won't, you know, how if you have two Google Homes in the same room, it will automatically know, like, you know, don't respond from both of them. It'll just pick whichever one's closer to you or has better reception from the far field microphones, I think. As of right now, the Pixel Stand doesn't do that. So I've been really annoyed with it, actually, because every time I try to talk to it, it's defaulting to my Home Mini. And, you know, that's annoying. I haven't really gotten to use the, the Pixel Stand's awesome. I just think it has a few little bugs and a little software things that need to be worked out. That's my thoughts on Pixel Stand. Someone asked, how is Super Res Zoom good or bad? I don't know if you saw this, but it's got this crazy thing where if your camera is perfectly still and you try to use Super Res Zoom, it actually uses the OIS to move the sensor around so that it can get more data to use for the Super Res Zoom, which is incredible to me.
It's remarkably clever. If you're interested in this kind of camera stuff, Google AI published an in-depth blog post explaining how they got Super Res Zoom to work, and it's so smart.
Yeah, your audio is still breaking up really bad.
Ah, ooh.
Just turn the video off. See how that goes.
Okay.
It's incredible, and I wouldn't say it's as good as the telephoto lens on the iPhone. But I would say to the naked eye for a normal person, you probably can't tell the difference, you know, between if you have an iPhone, you tap the 2X, obviously that's straight out of the sensor. It's not using any digital zoom there. And on the digital zoom, the Super Res Zoom on the Pixel, it's not as good. If you compare them side by side and you look at it, it's not as good, obviously. But it gets close enough that you might not be able to tell, or most people might not be able to tell. So that's an incredible technical feat, in my opinion. One person pointed out that actually last year with the Pixel 2, they started working on some kind of Super Res Zoom.
Digital zoom.
Like improved digital zoom using algorithms.
Yep.
And it wasn't marketed. Like it was literally like a thing. It was actually a part of the Pixel 2 feature lineup, but it just wasn't marketed. And this year it's like, I think it's more complex. I think the algorithms and the technical parts behind it are more complex than they were last year. But Google's obviously marketing it now as a significant feature.
Yeah, last year it was just the ability to zoom in seamlessly, to be able to zoom in to an image without there being a jump or without it breaking.
Oh, really? I thought it was also kind of a Super Res related thing. I might have been wrong. I can't remember. That's interesting. Let's see if there's any more questions.
On the camera front, talk about the wide-angle lens.
Oh, yeah.
As somebody that doesn't take selfies, I would have probably preferred a telephoto lens on the back rather than a wide-angle. How's your experience testing it out with regular people?
I think that I agree. I mean, I'm with you on this. I would prefer a telephoto lens versus a rear wide angle lens like LG's been doing for a long time.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
But I think the average person, like the iPhone user that Google wants to sell these phones to, cares about the front-facing camera more. You know, that's just a difference. And I think that my experiences with showing this phone to people would corroborate that. I actually let my teenage sister-in-law try out the Pixel 3 for an entire evening, just take pictures of it. We were going down to downtown Houston, so we had a lot of opportunities to take pictures of buildings at night and stuff like that. But yeah, she was like very, very impressed and you know, sold on the wide angle selfie thing. And I mean Google did a really good job of selling it at the event too. They showed they showed that video of all these people that are trying to take, you know, like take groupie selfies or whatever and struggling. That must have taken, side note, that video must have taken like 100 hours to compile, to find all of that footage and compile it all like that. It is incredible just to find it all, because it's such, like, there was such a wide variety. Like, there was this from this like late night show, and then this from, you know, just some viral YouTuber. And it was like all these examples. They must have hired people to, like, I don't know. I don't know how they did that. The other ad that they had was the Shush ad, which was also very, very well done. You know, it was like another example of, like, there was 100 clips, maybe 20 clips, I don't know, of just people who had their phones go off in awkward situations. Like, one person was jumping into, they were racing, a swimmer that was racing, and they had their phone go off, and they jumped in the water too soon because their phone went off. And, you know, like, they did such a good job of compiling all that. And really, you know, I think that that really shows that these features are, like, solving maybe not real problems for people like us, because we're, you know, technical, you know, or tech savvy, more tech savvy than the average person, but real problems for normal people who are trying to take group selfies is, I need a wide angle camera, and the wide angle camera solves that problem for them. So I think we probably underestimate how valuable that is to most people. I haven't used it yet. don't really care about it, because, like you, I don't really take selfies. So yeah, that's that. Anyone have any more questions? Feel free to drop more questions in the live chat on YouTube. Let's see, what else haven't we talked about? I wanted to talk a little bit. Go ahead. What were we gonna say?
I guess we should talk about the scratching that some people are seeing. That some reviewers are seeing, I should call
it. Almost every review mentioned it. I think some people are wrong. I think that it is just as scratchable as every other glass phone, which means it is scratchable. So I've had a XS that I've beaten up over the last year, which people would probably cringe at because it's an $1,000 phone. But, you know, I've beaten this phone up, and it's got, you know, it's got dozens of scratches on the back. And that's normal for a glass phone, because it's glass, and anything harder than glass is going to scratch glass. At least in my experience, for instance, The Verge, in their review, they mentioned that they put their keys in the same pocket as the phone to see how that would go. And one, I don't know anyone who does that. If you're putting, this thing's basically a piece of jewelry, like the iPhone X. Side note, that's one of the things I love about the Pixel 3 is that the build quality is so much nicer, and it just feels so much more premium, way more premium than you would think when you see it side by side with the Pixel 2 XL, because it looks identical. But anyways, back to what I was saying, you know, no one is going to put their keys in the same pocket as their really nice phone, or at least they shouldn't. And if you're not, I think that the back of your phone is going to get scratched. It will happen. It is glass. But I don't think that there's a scratch gate here. I don't think that this matte finish is any more scratch. It might be. It may be. I don't know for sure, because I don't have a single scratch on it on mine yet. So that's my anecdote. My anecdote is I don't have a single scratch on mine. And I've been using it, you know, I haven't been treating it like a baby. I just use it like a normal person does. And so far I don't have a single scratch. And so that leads me to believe that just like last year's 2XL with the glass at the top, it's going to get scratched eventually. There's going to be something. I'm going to have sand or something in my pocket that's going to scratch it, but it's not, I don't think there's a problem here. I actually showed on camera. Actually, I'll show on camera right now. For anyone that's watching, there's 54 people live. I will scratch the heck out of this with my keys on camera for anyone that cares. So you can see that. You can see that, right? That, like, this is metal. It was like worst case scenario, scratching keys directly on it. Well, I mean, not worst case scenario, because this metal is not as hard as glass. But, you know, like, watch. Like, it's like, that was directly metal on glass. Like, that's the keys in pocket situation. And for all intents and purposes, that wipes off. I can't tell or see any kind of permanent mark left over. Yeah, so that's my take on the glass situation. Do you have your Pixel 3 yet? I meant to ask you. I mean, did you order one, or?
It came the minute we started podcasting.
So, really? So it's sitting at the door right now?
Basically.
man, that's unfortunate.
But yeah, I ordered a small Pixel 3, 64 gigs, black, because I wasn't bold enough to get pink. Because if it were more pink, I would bother. But it looks like white at this point. So
yeah,
that's me for a year.
Yeah, well, Google got to choose my colors because these are review units. And I have the Just Black and the Clearly White. Just Black 3XL and Clearly White 3. And I would have picked the pink. If I could have picked anything, if I would have been able to pick my review units, I would have picked not pink for both of them. Because I think it's gorgeous. And honestly, I don't think it's like, I don't know. Like, it's not feminine, if that makes sense.
No,
like,
not
it's
at not, all.
It's like a very neutral pink, and I love it. I mean, it's like they made it. It's peach. That's a really good way to put it. And the orange button complements the peach
very well.
So, yeah. What else is there?
I wanted to add one thing about the scratching thing.
Yeah.
I don't think most people care about scratched up phones. I really don't think so.
No. Yeah.
So many people use busted phones and busted screens on top, and they go on for years, for a good year before replacing it, if they ever replace it. So
yeah, absolutely. Even if this was a scratch gate, it's not a problem, in my opinion. I mean, and it shouldn't be. My wife, for instance, she has an iPhone 7 that she's been using for 2 years now, and it is destroyed. Like, the glass is absolutely destroyed to the point where I'm surprised that she's not getting, like, her fingers aren't bleeding from using it. But it's been destroyed for like a year now, and it just doesn't bother her. And I've seen that. You've probably seen that too. That be where, you know, the average person has destroyed glass phones, and they just you just get used to it, I guess, the same way you get used to a notch,
basically.
I think we live in this bubble where we idolize these little pieces of silicon, and most people, it's just one more tool in their life, or a lot of people, it's just one more tool in their life. And, you know, what else is there to talk about? The software, I guess we talked about how nice and smooth it is. Like, this is the best feeling version of Android. Oh, we can talk about the multitasking situation. So, not multitasking, but the navigation. So Google made it mandatory that these phones have gesture nav, which we saw debuted with Android P Developer Preview 2, I think. What do you think about that? What do you think about the gesture nav in general? And what do you think about it being forced on you?
I've absolutely gotten used to it, to the point where it's very hard to go back to a non-gesture nav phone. Gestures, they're so intuitive. There's a reason Google added them. Being able to focus your finger at one point versus three points, it's seamless. It's natural. I have no other way of putting it beyond it's natural.
I think some gesture navs are natural. Have you used the iPhone 10? Like, have you used the iPhone 10's nav at all? Like a longer experience with it?
I actually don't like the gesture nav. I don't. So on the iPhone 10, you can scroll up just half. You can scroll up from the gesture bar just halfway, and then that takes you to multitasking. I really don't think that's a natural gesture.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. I don't think that that's natural, but I don't do that anymore. At least personally, my take is I think the iPhone 10 gesture nav is the best one. And I agree that opening the multitasking screen by going halfway and like stopping and then let go, like that's not the most natural gesture. And I would say that the gesture to open it on the Android PNAV is not really that much better. I mean, in the Android PNAV, you swipe right, basically, or I mean, you can swipe up to open the screen, but like to do like the quick switching between apps, you swipe right on the pill, and there's absolutely nothing to tell you that you should do that. And there's no instruction on that either. Like there's nothing when you start using the phone, nothing that teaches you how to use the gesture nav. So you have to pretty much just get it. And the whole swipe right thing to go to the most recent app and or open the quick app switcher thing is not natural at all, in my opinion. What I think is natural is on the MacBook. I mentioned this before on the podcast. On the MacBook, swiping left and right between full screen apps is a four-finger gesture. And that makes a lot of sense because you feel like you're touching the screen in a sense and just moving. You know, it makes a lot of sense metaphorically because you're just touching, you're grabbing the whole screen. Using four fingers kind of connects in your brain that you're grabbing something, you know. And you're grabbing the whole screen and you're pushing the whole thing over. And what Apple did with the iPhone X nav is that you can just grab the bottom with your thumb and push it over. And so you get this feeling of like pushing between apps, which is not the most efficient when you're trying to go for one of those deeper apps. Anywhere farther than like the second or third most recent app you've used, it takes a lot of effort to get to where you want to go. And if that's the case, I think most people would probably just go to their home screen and find the app icon anyway. So that's why I really, really like the iPhone X's gesture nav, is that you can swipe back and forth between your three most recent apps. And I think it just makes so much sense, in my opinion. And I just wish that was what Google did with the bottom swiping on the Android one. I wish you could just swipe left and right to go between like most recent apps. I don't know. That's my take on the gesture nav. On the aspect of whether or not it's cool that Google made us use it, very, very, very unpopular opinion, but I prefer Google to make design decisions and stick with them rather than make everything an option. Mm-hmm. Some options are good, good to have. I think some options should be options. For instance, choosing your wallpaper. That was something the original iPhone didn't let you do. Google, Apple decided, no, your wallpaper is going to be solid black and you just have to deal with that. And they turned around quickly on that one within a year or two. And so that's the kind of thing that's like a personalization aspect that like makes sense for it to be an option. But when it comes to the basics of human interaction design, I think those are the kinds of things that companies should be making an authoritative call on and saying, no, this is the best way we've found for you to interact with your phone. We're not going to change it all the time because we don't want you to have to keep relearning things. But it's okay for us to change it and decide, yes, this is better. It is objectively better. It may take you time to get used to, but it's better. And in this specific case, I mean, sometimes companies do that and I disagree with them. I initially disagreed with Apple that the gesture nav was better on the iPhone X. Getting rid of the home button was a good idea. And now I completely agree because guess what? They were right. I initially disagreed that this, in my opinion, flawed gesture nav on Android P is worse than the three button situation. In some ways, I still think it is. And a lot of ways, I still think a lot of Android OEMs do gesture nav better, like OnePlus and Apple, which is not an Android OEM, but you get what I mean. But now I'm okay. I'm okay with the fact that they decided that even if it's not perfect, like this is, you know, Google decided this is what we're doing. And I think it's fine. It's fine. And you get used to it. I would be interested to see what happens next year. How are they going to tweak it? How are they going to change it to make it even better? We'll see. I think that they probably will in a year or two, you know, make it better. Mm-hmm. What do you think about feel the same way? Or
I'm actually very curious how companies like Samsung and LG end up adopting the pill navigation, whether they're going to like customize it in any way, whether they're going to do something as simple as customize the pill shaped button or the back button. That's what I'm most curious about at this point, as we see more Android Oreo updates, what these companies end up doing. Android Pie updates, excuse me.
Yeah, we'll see. That's another interesting topic. It's kind of a bigger topic that I've started to think about lately is what's the future of Android and Fuchsia? We wrote last week. I don't think we got a chance to talk about this last week because we did our podcast on Wednesday. But Google did not say the word Android a single time during the 10.9 event, which I don't know. It's two things. One, that's not surprising in the sense that there were not many. I actually counted, and the number of times brand names in general were mentioned at 10.9 were lower than usual. The word Google Home was not said that many times, or at least fewer times in the last couple of years. The word Google Assistant was not said that many times, or at least fewer times than last couple of years. But the disparity between seeing how much they talked about Chrome OS, I think they said it 17 times, I counted. And then the number of times they talked about Android, or they said the word Android, which was zero, was notable. I mean, it's the first time that Google has not said the word Android at a public-facing hardware event since Android launched. So yeah, it's notable. And I guess one of the things, kind of connecting back to what you were just saying, is I'm wondering, you know, what is the future of Google? You know, making Android, and it's obviously open source, like maintaining Android and allowing it to be, you know, an operating system that is used by everyone. Yeah. And differentiating their own products. Because, like, I mean, we can look at Android things versus Chrome Cast platform, which just happened with Google Home. Maybe you can talk about that.
Before that, I just wanted to quickly add that the Android in Europe situation, Google, in light of the European antitrust ruling earlier this year, which Google is appealing, but in the meantime, they announced a series of steps they're taking to follow the guidelines. So essentially, it has to do with what apps that Google, what manufacturing deals Google can sign with various OEMs in terms of pre-installing Google apps. So I starting at the end of the month and at the end of October, manufacturers can release devices with forked versions of Android. In the past, Google tried to cut down on this fragmentation by having manufacturers sign compatibility agreements that said that if you agree to preload our apps, you cannot make other devices that are running forked Android and don't feature these apps. Which, very simply, it's a good idea. You don't want to confuse consumers with these are Google Android phones in the broadly speaking, and Android phones that use Android, the underlying Android, and feel and work similarly to the official Google Android. Explaining it is already confusing. It's setting up these two classes of devices. And now this is allowed so that Google can comply with the EU regulations. So I think we're going to see, I can't even say that. The question is whether these manufacturers, whether Samsung is just going to release Samsung phones in Europe with just the Galaxy App Store, because they very much wanted, they're already doing that now. They're trying to make Galaxy apps a thing. So the question is whether this will embolden them and what the consumer reaction is to all these changes. So in terms of what the future of Android will look like, I think we're in for a very interesting year ahead of what these companies are going to be doing. In a way, we're going to see if consumers want Google apps, if they want Chrome, if they want the Play Store, if they realize the importance of having the Play Store on your device and having all these popular apps. This is something we're going to come to a head in the next year. Do you have any thoughts about it, whether we're going to start seeing more fragmentation?
Yeah, what strikes me is that there's a lot of things all happening at the same time. that kind of point to a sea change. One is what you just described, everything that's happening in the EU. That's like going to change the dynamic of Android completely. Another one is Google is developing its own Android alternative. We know this. Bloomberg reported that their goal with Fuchsia is literally for it to replace Android. As of Bloomberg's report, at least, that is actually what, that's what our good friend Mark Gurman understands to be true about what, I think it was Mark Gurman that reported that. Sorry to whoever reported it if I'm wrong. But, you know, that's something that Google's doing. And it's like, whether or not that happens in 2 years or 5 years, like that's as of now, that's what's currently understand to be their goal. Three, Google is directly competing with their biggest partners now. And more seriously than ever with every passing year. So this is Google Pixel 3. This is the third round on this. And Google's marketing is intensifying every year. They're taking the products more seriously. Obviously, they took a lot of criticism last year and they really doubled down and fixed a lot of problems, a lot of complaints that people had. They're tripling down on AI stuff. You know, so Google is really like, whereas before, I mean, even 5 years ago, I mean, when Google acquired Motorola, like they had to get rid of Motorola because they did not. I feel like the relationships were too. The dynamic Samsung. Of the relationship. Yeah, Samsung wasn't okay. The dynamic of not just Samsung, but the relationship between them and the Android OEMs was not in a place where they could directly compete with the people that they were partnering with to launch these phones. And that's obviously thrown out the window now. Like that is like Google has zero shame. Like it's almost like. You know, we're going to launch and we're going to directly compete with Samsung and we want to beat Samsung. It's like that's how seriously they're taking their phones. And it's like if Samsung ditches Android because of that, well, you know, that's going to be the cost. Like that's kind of what it seems like their attitude is now. And maybe it's not that extreme, at least not yet. But that's how that seems like that's the direction.
It certainly feels like a backup plan because.
Yeah. Kind of. I think it's the primary plan now, though.
Yeah. Seems
like becoming the primary plan. The primary plan is Google wants to do hardware better than anyone.
But you can argue that they're trying to compete with the iPhone, and maybe they're in the background telling Samsung execs that the Pixel is meant to compete with the iPhone, not you guys. Yeah, who knows maybe. What these backroom discussions sound like, but. This could be this seems like a backup plan if Samsung goes rogue, if they're allowed to go rogue.
Yeah. And there was a fourth thing. There was a fourth aspect to this that I was thinking that another thing that just is part of this bigger
sea change. Fuchsia.
Sea change. I already mentioned that. Fuchsia, Google directly competitor with competitor or directly competing with partners and the other one was, what was it?
Assistant.
Oh, the EU. The EU stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I'll just leave it at that. Those are my three big points that are like, things are changing. And it's not going to be business as usual for Android, I don't think. And, I guess actually, I'll add number four. This is my number four. The Android brand itself is disappearing from everything, from all of Google's products, all of their apps, you know.
I offer you one counter in Android One and Android Go.
Well, that's not even a consumer-facing thing as much. I mean, it is. It kind of is.
Nokia is running with it.
Yeah,
they're like, I mean, the Android One company.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. But still, like, it's kind of still like something that's, you know, it's kind of buried in the. It's maybe on the back of the box and it's buried in the settings app, but it's not like. I mean, in Moto's ads for the E4 or the G, what are we on now? G12.
G6.
in their TV ads, are they bragging about Android One? Are they using a little green robot to advertise these phones? I don't think so. Maybe I'm wrong. Someone can DM me, slide into my DMs, and tell me I'm wrong. But in almost every case, the Android brand is disappearing. And you know, this event on 10.9 was the culmination of that. I mean. I think still yet to see. There's still some stragglers, as I mentioned. Android Auto is still on the Pixels. Android Auto is obviously still the name of their auto platform, as is Google, as is Android Go, as is Android One, as is Android TV. None of those platforms themselves have been renamed, but all the consumer-facing stuff, like Android TVs run Android TV, but they're not really advertised as Android TV, and that contrasts very starkly to even a few years ago when it was like all those Be Together, Not the Same billboards were all over the place, and even a year ago the Android Oreo launch was a big deal. It was a big presser with like huge Android robots and, you know, the eclipse that happened and everything. You know, so like it's very quickly Android has been buried compared to where it was just a year or two ago. And so, you know, Android has a long history of coming and going and disappearing and coming back. But it seems like this time might be the time. Might be the time that it actually gets buried. Google does not want these Google Pixel phones to be called Android phones. They are Google phones. It is a Pixel phone. And that's a whole brand that they're building and spending millions of dollars to build. And so, yeah, a big part of public awareness of brands is based on how many dollars are spent on advertising. And the number of advertising dollars being spent on the Android brand right now seems to be zero or near zero. And the number of dollars being spent on Pixel and Google Home and Google Assistant, even Google Assistant. I think Google Assistant, the brand name, is like 10x as publicized now as Android is.
Yeah.
Side note, Google listed Google Assistant under the operating system of the section of the spec sheet for the Pixel 3.
That was wildly fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's Google Assistant isn't an operating system. It isn't. It just simply isn't. But I think the message they're sending is the assistant is an interface, and it is the way you interact with your phone primarily. You know, it is the way by which you interact with people.
Assistant as an OS is such an interesting idea, because Google, I think they make a big deal about Assistant being available on iOS, that Google Assistant standalone app. Google Assistant is also available on these smart dumb phones that you can find in India that run like this basic OS. You can get Google Assistant, you can get it everywhere. And as we're moving into a cloud-centric future, you can have these interfaces, you can have these familiar interactions exist without having to own the entire operating system. Voice interaction is so much more powerful than touch interaction. You can customize it, you can brand it with the voice so much more than you've ever been able to do with an operating system, really, in this day and age. So it's a Assistant's not an operating system, but Assistant is as ubiquitous as an operating system moving forward.
Yeah, and it got me thinking, what's the common denominator between all of the products that Google has right now? The common denominator is Assistant. And what is the operating system that they're apparently building in the background that they're testing on everything? They're testing it on smart displays. We know for a fact that they're testing it on the Home Hub hardware. It doesn't currently run on the Home Hub hardware. So the common denominator with everything is Assistant. And the other common denominator is they're building this operating system that will run on all these things that have Assistant. And my thought, stray thought, but what if they publicly branded Fuchsia OS as Google Assistant? Or Google Assistant OS or something like that. Fuchsia, it seems like even on the phone or the tablet experiences that we've seen on Pixelbook and Armadillo was the other UI that we've seen, they're very assistant centric.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that could be a possibility. We'll see.
Yeah.
Fuchsia. I guess, yeah. Fuchsia is a whole other topic. It's going to be really interesting in the coming years to see what happens with that. Actually, in the next 12 months, probably. But I guess I'll close out the show.
Breaking news.
What's up?
iFixit found that the smaller Pixel 3 uses an LG display panel.
Wow. That is very interesting.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
It's a complete reversal of last year. And as you said, Yeah, at the top of the show, you said the Pixel 3 XL had a slightly better screen, and I think we now know why.
Wow, that's a very nice, we tied it up with a bow, I guess. the show closed out really well. I think I'll close it out on that note. We're over an hour now. I'll just make my recommendations because someone asked in the comments just now or in the chat, who should get the Pixel 3 XL? My answer is, for Pixel owners, anyone who has the original Pixel, 100% get it. You will not recommend it. I think those people are the ones who did it right if they skipped last year's debacle. If you have Pixel 2 XL, the screen is magnificently better. You will not be upset with the Pixel 3 XL if you upgrade, I think. Same with Pixel 2. And if you're on any other phone that's like pre-iPhone 8, pre-iPhone 7, it's a great buy. And I think it will make a lot of people happy and it'll be a good phone for a couple years. We'll see. Hopefully it has the longevity of the original Pixels, which in my opinion are incredible still. My original Pixel XL is like running like a beast still. So I'll close out the show on that note. Do you have any final thoughts before we close out this? This is definitely a me heavy show because I was the one who reviewed the Pixel 3.
And next week will be a Home Hub heavy show.
Yes, indeed. Okay. Yeah, it will be. I'll have my review up for next week's show. And honestly, we had way more viewers today and the last Wednesday live viewers. So maybe we should try Wednesdays going forward. We'll see. Maybe you can let us know in the comments over at 95 Google and let us know what you think about timing on these things. We had like double the number of live viewers today. So that's something we're thinking about. We might move from Friday because Friday's the day people are getting off of work and not sitting around their computers as much. And we're usually later in the evening on Friday, especially Eastern time. So maybe that doesn't make sense, and maybe Wednesday's better for people. Let us know what you think about that. Until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Friday, maybe not. Today's Wednesday, and publish every Saturday morning, maybe not. Maybe we'll publish tomorrow morning. And you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can even listen over at 95google.com. Thanks for tuning in as always. We apologize for all of Abner's connection issues. We really, really would like to figure that out. It's been a rough time. I think Abner has a monopolistic internet situation.
Indeed. AT&T.
Right. Yeah.
Anyways.
See you next week, everybody.
Bye. I'm waving.